D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, and David Janes here with you. Chad Withrow from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow will join us in about 20 minutes. We'll get his thoughts on the news today from the Tennessee Titans. Mike Borgonzi, officially in charge. He's picking the players. He's leading the head coaching search. Chad Brinker, you go do other things that are important but maybe aren't front-facing. So we'll get his thoughts on that and the college football playoff. But I want to continue the college football playoff conversation. I have three questions here that I am going to ask both Willie and Derek, and you can answer them as well, 615-737-1025. So Derek, we'll start with you. Question number one, again, the four remaining teams in the college football playoff. Oregon versus Indiana in the Peach Bowl on January 9th. Ole Miss versus Miami in the Fiesta Bowl on January 8th. Who is, quote-unquote, America's team? Indiana or Ole Miss?
That's easy. Indiana's America's team.
Is it easy, though?
Yes, I think Indiana's. I mean, listen, Ole Miss is a really good story because of the circumstances. And the circumstances only arise when, toward the end of the season. It's not like, you know, people didn't think Ole Miss wasn't one of the top teams in the country and, you know, or they couldn't win a national championship. But it was, okay, their coach leave. Can they sustain what they had during the season and overcome these sort of distractions? And as we see, they've been able to. But I just think the whole story of Indiana, I think the Cignetti sort of charisma, if that's what you want to call it.
Yeah, that's a word for it.
Exactly. His charisma. And then you have Mendoza and this sort of geeky, but, you know, really lovable, good guy that seems to be a leader, and he's leading this team. And then you have a bunch of other guys coming from other schools that are coming here to Indiana. And Indiana wasn't supposed to be in this space. It was, wait till they play a top ranked team. Will they beat Oregon? Well, wait till they play Ohio State. Will they shut down Ohio State? No, wait till they get there and play an SEC team. And they just steamrolled Alabama. They are America's team. I love Indiana. And I hated them at one point. Not as much as I hate Michigan.
Of course.
But I dislike Indiana because they were sort of a rival in a sense.
Yeah, a conference rival.
Exactly. But this, if they're not America's team, then who is? I know you said
I've got two words for you. Lane Kiffin.
But why is that America's team? Like, I think it's a different.
Because people have
it's an amazing story.
People love to hate Lane Kiffin, and the fact that Ole Miss is doing this. The fact that Ole Miss is doing this in spite of Lane Kiffin.
So everybody loves them.
That's my point. Yeah.
Okay, I get it.
But you know what? This is the separator for me. This is why Derek is right. And it's not Ole Miss, and it's not even close in my mind. It's because when you decide that you want to get down and dirty in the SEC and deal in the shadiness and the win at all costs and get maniacal, this is what you get. Right? So this is unique, but it's just life in the SEC, especially you bring in Lane Kiffin to begin with. Mm-hmm. So you kind of get what you get, even though this is really bizarre, and who knows which assistant coaches are going to be there or not be there. It's an amazing story, don't get me wrong, but it's kind of the murky, swampy underbelly of business being done in the SEC. Indiana is just a much more fun story. That's America's team to me.
Hey, Ole Miss is like landman. That's what Ole Miss is like. You know, you like them, but you know there's a bunch of stuff just going on.
Also, they're like the frat guys. No one likes the frat guys. That's Ole Miss.
Lane Kiffin posted a photo yesterday. I assume it was at a suite at the game. What a great finish. So much fun. Only two more to go at Ole Miss football. Shut up. You blew them off.
But that's what he wants you to do.
You don't get to enjoy this. So.
You took the bait.
He got him.
That is true. All right. Question number two, and I'm glad I'm asking Willie this one first. So as we were talking about all of the college football playoff rankings leading up to the reveal, and we were talking about Vanderbilt's place in the rankings and how we felt that they were being shortchanged, we were talking a lot about Miami. What has Miami done to deserve the spot they're in? They play in the ACC. They lost to some crappy teams in the ACC. Why is Miami even considered in this? Well, Miami has gone on the road to Texas A&M, won 10-3, and then Miami knocked out Ohio State in the Cotton Bowl. So, Willie, do we owe Miami an apology?
You got to give them credit, right? They're doing really well with the opportunity they've had. And I think it was Joe Rexrode who said it. There's a lot of people saying, like, once you get into the tournament, the whole thing is when you get in. This happens in basketball every year where you're like, well, so-and-so shouldn't have gotten in. And then you see that team win two or three games, and everybody's like, ah, see? It's a natural reaction. And I guess we do have to say, Miami, especially early in the season, they were waxing people. They do have a lot of talent. You know, Bane is a great example. And I just thought it was more about the profile of what they had done or not done to get in. It wasn't really that I thought Miami was a bad team, even though they did kind of have a sag there towards the end. So I'm not going to apologize at all, but I give them full marks for playing their best with the opportunity they've had. And who's to say that if Vanderbilt or Notre Dame or the two or three other, you know, the two or three teams that were the outside looking in couldn't have done the same thing? If Indiana could do it, then why not Notre Dame or Vanderbilt? It's just the opportunity.
Quickly, I forgot, and it has been pointed out to me a couple of times on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, that Lane Kiffin is still getting his bonuses for all of this. LSU is paying them, so he's happy because he gets to keep getting paid. So, Derek, do we owe Miami an apology for all of the criticism that we levied upon the Hurricanes once the field was set?
I think so. Listen, Miami wasn't, you know, playing their best at the end. The loss, what, to Louisville at the end?
They lost to Louisville and SMU.
Exactly. That pretty much put them in a position where they weren't playing for their league championship game, and it was like, well, we need something to happen.
By the way, a reminder of who won the ACC title.
Yes.
That would be Duke.
Yes.
Okay. Go ahead.
But, yes, because after that, I think, you know, Notre Dame had a big beef with Miami. We should have been in there instead of Miami. You know, even though Miami beat us, we were playing better toward the end. And they were right. They were. But then you looked at Miami and you said, well, they were not playing well toward the end. But I think what you're seeing now is a Miami team that is fueled by all that. And they're fueled in a way that it can take them to the national championship game. Now, that would be a hell of a matchup between who do they play in this next up? Oh,
Miami plays Ole Miss.
Yes. I'm telling you, if they get by Ole Miss, an Indiana and Miami battle, those two defenses, the way they're playing, it would be reminiscent, I believe, of the Ohio State and Indiana game. The first time when Indiana beat Ohio State in the Big Ten championship game was a low-scoring game, but the defense was the talk of that game. If Miami's able to, you know, move further, this defense and where they're playing, man, it's going to be tough to beat them. And Beck is doing just enough. He's not messing up, but he's doing just enough. He's making clutch throws at the end, and he should. He's a veteran guy. He's been in this situation before, playing a high-stakes game when he was at Georgia. But this team has showed, and their playmakers are showing up on defense. That's why I said this team looks like a Miami Hurricanes of the old. That's how they're flying around and are hitting people.
And Michael Irvin and Ray Lewis are having the time of their lives.
Of course.
On the
so
sidelines right now.
I think people do owe Miami an apology because Miami has shown in the way.
I'm not doing it. I'm not giving it to them.
Why not, Willie?
You're the SEC snob. That's
exactly
why.
Miami
I'm
has
not apologizing
shown against an SEC team that they dominated on defense and then a Big Ten team that had no answers for the defense of the Miami Hurricanes. If that's not telling you, you owe me an apology, what they got to do, Willie, win a national championship?
No, I'm not apologizing. It's all about opportunity. Vanderbilt could have gone there. They could have won.
But Vanderbilt but Vandy just lost their other game, man.
It's different. Different. They would have had Stoward. You know, it's a totally different
thing. Yeah, I get that part. Yes, yes. You're right about it. Yes. I was just picking with you.
Before we get to the third question, let's go to our phone line. Mike from Old Hickory is with us. Mike, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
How you doing, guys?
Good, thank you.
Hey.
2026, this is a wild football thing. I've never seen where we've got Indiana, we've got Miami, and I never predicted this, ever. So my question is about the SEC. Do you think that this is the first year now we're seeing these teams that are going to go to the finals, portal transfer in NIL is permanently transferred, not only college football, but SEC? Because now we're seeing teams now that, you know what, kids are going to say, I don't need to go to Alabama. I don't need to go to Georgia. I don't need to go to Ohio State. I can go somewhere, get paid a lot of money, and guess what? Win a national championship. Do you guys think that that's kind of what's going on here now?
Well, I think it's not just college football. I think it's college sports.
Yes.
I think really if you take a look, if you're smart with your formula and you have at least enough NIL resources to compete, you don't have to have the most money. But if you're smart with it, I think forever, this as long as we're kind of in this world, which I you know, the world is going to obviously evolve within what we're seeing here. But I do think that watch college basketball. You might see somebody that's never won it before win the thing. College baseball, we've already seen examples of it. It can happen. It's different.
That leads us to our third question. And I am going to read directly from Stuart Mandel of The Athletic here. And here we go. The All-SEC Sugar Bowl was a thrilling game, but the SEC as a whole is having a disastrous postseason. The league has gone 2-6 in CFP/bowl games when not facing each other. Only Ole Miss over Tulane in the first round and Texas over coachless Michigan in the Citrus Bowl have prevailed. The types of schools SEC fans have long mocked, Illinois over Tennessee, Houston over LSU, Virginia over Missouri, have beaten them in bowls. Granted, those non-CFP games can be deceiving in the age of opt-outs, but a telling result came in the ReliaQuest Bowl when the teams combined had just one player missing. Vanderbilt, a 10-2 squad boasting the Heisman runner-up, could not stop 8-4 Iowa, falling 34-27. Vandy, of course, was one of the seven SEC teams Commissioner Greg Sankey said, quote-unquote, merited inclusion in the CFP. Now, guys, I remember having this conversation during SEC media days. I remember bringing up a story written in the Wall Street Journal about could panic be setting in the SEC? Because the SEC hasn't won the past couple national championships. Now, there are still SEC teams in the mix. So, well, it's really old. It's only Ole Miss, right?
Yeah,
it's only Ole Miss. It's only Ole Miss. So it's all up to Ole Miss to save the SEC. But we were talking about this in the summertime. So, Derek, should we finally believe that the SEC's dominance in college football is waning?
I guess. You know, if you're just talking the last couple of years, then yes. But listen, whether they've won or not, they've been there, the SEC. And as the field continues to expand, you're going to have more SEC teams in here. Listen, I'm a Big Ten guy through and through. But I understand that as the playoffs expand, more teams will eventually get in from the SEC as opposed to possibly the Big Ten. What is going to happen now is it's not necessarily, you know, will these teams be there or the dominance still be there? I think, yeah, they will have some dominance. Georgia, I think, still will be Georgia. I think Alabama will get better. I think some of these other teams, whether, you know, Ole Miss you're looking at now, Vanderbilt that's getting better. I think this is just a byproduct of the NIL. But here's what's going to have to happen. These teams have to start now building for if Indiana ends up winning, they would have played, 15 games? They would be 15-0 if they win the national championship, first 15-0
Or maybe 16.
Just think, once they expand, you're talking about 17.
They would be 16-0 if they win the national championship.
You're talking about 17, possibly 18 games for an individual. It's no longer, it's about building your roster now. It's about sustaining the length of a season, because we've seen teams that get bit by the bug or guys chose to opt out at the end. Well, my prize tight end or my prize wide receiver choose to opt out, I got to make sure I have depth, guys that are experienced that can come in and we don't lose a beat. This is pro sports, people. That's all it is. So with that being said, I think you will see more now teams jockeying for that national championship. The SEC will still be there, no doubt. But it may be a Big Ten team this year or a couple of years. Then it may be a Big 12. Then it may be an ACC. Then I don't know what the Pac-12 is going to do. I mean, they may get it. Yeah, who knows? So I think there's going to be now a jockeying of teams. Because before it was, okay, Georgia's going to win. Alabama's going to win. Ohio State.
LSU.
LSU. And then you have some outliers. Michigan, they'll win. But then you have a few outliers that may. I think now you're going to start seeing more SEC teams or more ACC teams. They're all, it's going to be the same teams, but they're all going to be jockeying now for a national championship.
All right, Mr. SEC snob, you answer the same question.
Well, right now, if there's ever bragging rights for the Big Ten, this is it, right? Mm-hmm. They've got it. This happens sometimes. The SEC has been in that boat several bowl seasons too. And right now, probably it's what you think the bowl games mean outside of the playoff games. To me, the separator for the SEC is just the top to bottom desire to win for all 16 of the teams that are in there. I mean, it will never change. They will do anything to win. And sometimes they do dumb things like fire a coach after they made the playoffs. That kind of thing. Like, I don't know what's going to happen to Kalen DeBoer. He's not sitting pretty right now, and his team made it to the playoffs. You saw LSU fired their coach in the middle. That's kind of what brings them back, but it shows you that it will always mean that the saying is it just means more, but that will guarantee that they will always be in the mix. There's going to be some ebb and flow, but they'll always be right there, and I think it will always be the deepest league.
Before we go to break, David has something for you, Willie.
I just want to say from the bottom of my heart, I'd like to take this chance to apologize to absolutely nobody.
That's how Willie's feeling about Miami. I'm not apologizing for anything.
Not apologizing. ACC was weak.
Weak!
Oh, boy. 615-737-1025. We'll take your reaction to the college football playoff and more. We will talk about that with Chad Withrow from Hot Mike with Hutton Withrow coming up next. We'll also get his thoughts on the state of the Tennessee football program after the Vols lost in the Music City Bowl earlier this week. 615-737-1025. We are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 1025, The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, pleased to be joined on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, by our friend Chad Withrow from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow on Outkick. Hi, Chad, how are you?
Doing great, guys.
So, Chad, let's start with the week that was in the college football playoff. And I want to ask you about Indiana. Indiana put the smackdown on Alabama yesterday. And what Kirk Cignetti has done with that program over the past couple of years is nothing short of remarkable. But what I'm curious about is, in today's world of the transfer portal and NIL, how replicable do you think what Indiana is doing for other teams?
I think it's incredibly easy. It's not easy, but teams are able to imitate what Indiana's done if you get the right coach. I think Vanderbilt's done it, not to the Indiana level, but they've transformed their program in the last couple of years with Clark Lee with, money in NIL, but also a good focus on veteran transfer players in the portal, and it's really worked out for them. I think you can look at a lot of programs. Ole Miss hasn't been great in high school recruiting, but they've done a really good job in the portal, and they've built that thing up. It just feels like Ole Miss versus Indiana is almost the perfect game that this country deserves right now with the NIL era. it would shatter all preconceived notions about what college football programs are. Ole Miss is one of the historically losingest programs in the SEC. Indiana is the losingest program of any Power Four conference team. I just think it'd be perfect if it was those two teams that were left. Now, I say all that to also say there's only one Kurt Cignetti, and that guy is unbelievable. I mean, I watch Indiana play, and I don't know what you guys think when you watch them, but they look like the most well-coached team in history. They always make the right play. They always make the right decision. It is unbelievable to watch that team play the game of football. So it's very impressive, but I think you can replicate what they've done if you have a solid commitment financially in NIL and you find the right coach that develops the right culture. I think any program out there, is they're all looking around and saying, why not us if Indiana can do it?
Chad, since we last spoke, Tennessee's season ended in losing fashion, 30-28 against Illinois here at the Music City Bowl. You know all of this, but I'm going to tell you anyway. My friend Adam Sparks over at the Knoxville News Sentinel wrote that UT finished with an 0-5 record against FBS teams with a winning record and 7-0 against FBS teams with a losing record. So let me ask you this as our resident Vols fan. How should the Tennessee football program feel heading into 2026?
I mean, it was a disappointing year. I mean, there's no way to sugarcoat it. It was a bad year for Tennessee football. I mean, they finished 8-5. But, yeah, I mean, they beat the teams they should beat. They had a close call against Mississippi State, a pretty close call against an Arkansas team they should have handled better. But against the good teams, they came up short. You could put the what-if game in there. You know, hey, you lose two All-American, All-Conference caliber corners really before the season starts. Dermond McCoy never played a snap. Ricky Gibson played about a quarter and a half of football before he was lost for the season. That certainly put their defense behind the eight ball, but the defense wasn't good enough. The offense wasn't good enough in the biggest moments. They had a kicker issue, which I just saw in the last 15 minutes, that Max Gilbert has entered the portal. That's good news for Tennessee fans. It was a bad year for him in the biggest of moments. He missed another kick against Illinois that could have been the difference. So, yeah, look, I think it's a disappointing year for Tennessee. But the key for Josh Heupel was to not bury his head in the sand and say, hey, I've done a pretty good job here for 5 years. I know what I'm doing. I'm going to stick with my friends. I'm going to stick with my coaches. Instead, you got to take a long look in the mirror and be willing to adjust. And I think what we're seeing so far from Heupel is that he's doing just that. He fired Tim Banks and hired Jim Knowles, the defensive coordinator. He let the contract expire of his strength coach, who's been there with him since Central Florida. He's making some moves that I think shows a guy that knows this is a program at a crossroads going into year number 6. It's got to be better next year. And, guys, that schedule is not going to be any easier a year from now from what they face this year. So I'm not saying, you know, it's all hot seat for Josh Heupel, but he's got to show improvement. And I think it starts with making sure you get the defense right. And that's going to be going heavy in the portal and seeing if Jim Knowles and his system, if it can take quickly. If they can do that and you figure out quarterback also, and I think Tennessee has a chance to be pretty good again next year. But as far as the postmortem on this season, yeah, it wasn't good enough. And I think that Music City Bowl kind of encapsulates the whole season when you got a 3rd and 6 and in a dumb way you jump off sides to give them 3rd and 1 and that ends the game. That pretty much sums up Tennessee's season.
Now, Hutt, which dominance do you think was a little bit more surprising? The Hurricanes' dominance over Ohio State, they held them to under 50 yards rushing, or the dominance that Indiana had over Alabama?
I mean, I think it was Indiana, D-Mace, because it was the way in which they did it. Like, we knew Miami's defense was really good, and they've got NFL talent on that defense. By the way, Jacoby Thomas at safety would have looked pretty good in Tennessee Orange this year. Had they paid up and kept him, that was someone they could have used because he was all over the field in that Ohio State game for Miami. Yeah, I think that the Indiana dominance, because they rushed for over 330 yards, just how they physically won the line of scrimmage against Bama, both sides of the ball. I think that didn't surprise me that they won there. It surprised me they whipped Bama the way that they did. Now, I'm surprised that Ohio State is not going to be right there competing for another national championship, because I do think they probably have the best roster in all of college football. But Indiana showed that offense has some cracks in it, and you can get to them. And I think Miami feasted on that and did a really good job defensively. So if you're asking me the biggest surprise, it's got to be Indiana by 35 over Alabama. I thought Indiana would win. I didn't think they were going to dominate to that level.
Now, looking at the two quarterbacks that are the marquee guys, Dante Moore and obviously Mendoza, which one has to do more in order for their team to get where they need to go? Because, I mean, obviously you would look at Mendoza and say, well, their defense is just so dominant and they play together as a team. But Oregon's defense, they're no slouches either.
Yeah, I mean, I really think for both guys, it's about the same. Because they've got a stable of good running backs. They got good receivers. They've got a dominant defense. I mean, I think it was, what, 20-10 when they met in Eugene earlier this year? Mm-hmm. I really think the script is really similar for both Oregon and Indiana, which I think makes for a great matchup because we saw how good Oregon is defensively shutting out Texas Tech in that playoff game. So I think for both guys, it's about not making the big mistake, which they've shown that they're able to avoid. Dante Moore, you know, had a big interception in the first matchup with Indiana on a ball that was batted up into the air. But other than that, he was pretty solid in that game. I just think Indiana and Oregon are so good on both sides of the ball, especially defensively, that it's really going to come down to who doesn't make the big mistake, who can get the ground game going a little bit better, because both defenses, I think, are going to show up ready to play, and they're going to play well.
I'm talking to Chad Withrow, Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow. And Chad, you know, one other observation, and we just got done talking about this before you came on, but I'd love your insight on it. The value you put on these bowl matchups, I'm sure you watched Tennessee and Vanderbilt, but the physicality, like Vanderbilt was completely neutralized running the ball. They couldn't run it against Iowa. Iowa physically beat Vanderbilt up front, and Vanderbilt all year long in the SEC, they were very strong in that area week in and week out. So, are we willing to concede a little bit? Because I think you're an SEC snob like me, but the Big Ten has closed the gap here, I think, on how to build a team and how to win the battle in the trenches.
Willie, I think a couple of things, and I think you hit the nail on the head with this. First off, that the biggest surprise to me of bowl season may be Iowa physically pushing Vandy around the way they did. Because I just thought the way Vandy's played this year, and they play so well with a chip on their shoulder, that getting snubbed from the playoff and all those guys playing, everybody except for Stowers, they were going to come out ready to roll, and I thought they were going to dominate Iowa. I mean, I felt very strongly about that. And it was really the opposite until Vandy got it going offensively in that second half. But Iowa just physically looked dominant in that game, and that surprised me. I think, yes, you have to be the biggest SEC snob to come out of this postseason and say the SEC is far and away the best conference in college football. I think to an extent that we are a little bit brainwashed by ESPN because all of the games that we watch are on ESPN and they have the rights to all of the SEC. So I do think that they do a pretty good job of selling the SEC more than other conferences. And I also think that from a culture standpoint, and I don't know if this is right or wrong. I think it's wrong, but others may argue against me on this. I think in the SEC, we have put it in our heads so much as fans and people who follow and cover the conference that if you were out of the playoff mix, your season is ruined. It's over. It doesn't matter. Bowl games don't matter. They're an exhibition. That's why more SEC players opt out of these games than any other conference. That's why fans pretend to not care about bowl games, whether they do or don't. And I think the Big Ten culturally, they get in those games, especially against SEC teams, and they got something to prove. I mean, you saw Iowa taking victory laps over Vandy on social media with everything Diego Pavia said in the offseason on Bussing with the Boys about the Big Ten and Iowa and everything else. I mean, they knew it going in. They had something to prove. I think Illinois felt like they had something to prove against Tennessee and the SEC. So, yeah, I think the culture of the two conferences are very different. And when it comes to finishing out a season and doing it the right way, Willie, I think the Big Ten is superior to the SEC when it comes to team culture and what they're all about. And the SEC is going to have to figure that out and improve moving forward, or it's going to continue to shift in the direction of the Big Ten.
All right, Chad, I got to get your take on what we think is going to happen with Ole Miss here and the Lane Kiffin thing. Lane Kiffin loves to seek the attention. He's going to throw gasoline on the fire. He's going to not be ignored. You got all these assistant coaches. Well, how is this going to shake out?
How about Lane Kiffin also, Willie, trying to get with ESPN to get an interview during the game, which I thought was the most Lane Kiffin thing ever. And I'm honestly shocked ESPN said no. They're like, yeah, that's probably not a good idea to bring you on and bring the attention to you during that game. I thought they would love the ratings and the attention it would get for him being on that and the way it'd be clipped constantly. Here's the way I think it's going to go. I think that he's going to say no more with my coaches. They're not going to help you anymore. They got to get to work in the portal. They got to get to work here with me. And Ole Miss is going to have to figure some things out because they're going to lose their play caller on offense. They're going to lose other coaches. And they're going to have some analysts or other coaches on that staff have to figure this thing out as they get ready for Miami, because I think Lane Kiffin is done, you know, playing nice guy with letting those guys coach the team that they committed to coach. And I got to think also, if you're Lane Kiffin, I mean, he's not ever going to feel this way because he's Lane Kiffin, but it's just a mistake. You don't bail out on a team in the midst of a championship run. By the way, a program that you could argue in an NIL era may be on par with LSU. Who knows what the future holds? I know right now Ole Miss is a lot better than LSU, and Ole Miss is in the Final Four, and Lane Kiffin isn't a part of it. So, look, I think the guy made a mistake. I think maybe deep down he realizes that, and because of that, he's going to take his ball and go home, and that means his coaches will be coaching for him and not for his old team.
So, but how do you practically do it? That is a question. If he does basically say to all these guys, hey, you work for me, you can't stay, then, boy, I'm sure Ole Miss has thought of this, and they would figure out how do we do it, but that is a huge thing that could affect the game.
Oh, huge, and I think that's what he's going to do. Now, here's what I don't know. I don't know their contract situation. Is there a memorandum of understanding that's signed? Because if I'm Pete Golding and I'm talking to Charlie Weiss Jr., let's say, aren't you making a pitch to not go with that guy? Like, I know that he's already committed and said he's going to LSU, but is the paperwork signed? I don't know what's in the contract. I don't know what kind of buddy agreement LSU and Ole Miss worked out. There's also a report coming out now that Ole Miss is going to file a tampering charge against LSU, but I think that's kind of hard to file when you're cooperating with coaches of another school to be in your building to help prepare the team for playoff games. I mean, I think naturally some tampering is going to take place. So, yeah, I don't know where we go from here. I just know that if I'm Pete Golding and I'm Ole Miss, I mean, I think tampering kind of works both ways. Like, if a contract's not signed, aren't you trying to recruit them and pay them to stay? Especially Charlie Weiss Jr., who, by the way, has proven himself to be an excellent play caller in these last two games in the playoffs and throughout his time at Ole Miss. So I don't know where we go from here. I just don't think that LSU and Lane Kiffin are in the mood to cooperate anymore.
Chad Withrow from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick. He joins us every Friday. Chad, great stuff as always. Happy New Year. We'll catch up next week.
Happy New Year, fellas, and have a great weekend.
You as well. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, I asked Chad how Tennessee should feel heading into 2026. Let's talk about how Vanderbilt should feel heading into 2026 after the Commodore season ended with a loss in the ReliaQuest Bowl to Iowa. 615-737-1025 tonight on Totally Hits 93.3. Catch MTSU men's basketball as the Blue Raiders take on Louisiana Tech at 6:30 p.m. Coverage is also available on the Totally Hits Nashville app and at totallyhitsnashville.com.
Because it's straightforward, you know. I mean, we have work to do. We'll have some big shoes to fill, but that's part of the excitement of this. You know, we're gonna figure it out as we go. We'll have to change identity in some ways. We'll have to, you know, tweak some systems, but we'll have to win games differently next year than we did this year. But again, that's the fun of it. And what I do believe in is I got a locker room of guys that are connected, that love one another, that love playing football, and that will be returning to take this further. And that's a great starting point. We'll have work to do over the next couple of weeks to see where we net out in the portal and what we need to make sure we keep it going. We're going to introduce, I think, 20 freshmen in January, which will be great to get those guys' careers off and running. And the work of a coach begins. But I feel great about it. I'm excited about the future and excited to be at Vanderbilt long term, and can't wait for the next steps.
That was Clark Lee after Vanderbilt lost 34-27 to the Iowa Hawkeyes at the ReliaQuest Bowl in Tampa a couple of days ago. The Commodores end the season at 10-3. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. And I, too, was surprised by how that game played out, especially at the beginning. And Diego Pavia, in his final college game, yes, he's not coming back, okay? He's not coming back. This was Diego Pavia's final college game. He did Diego Pavia things, 25 of 38 for 347 passing yards and two touchdowns, plus 15 carries, 36 yards, and a rushing touchdown. But it wasn't enough, as the Commodores' best season ever, ends at 10-3. So, Willie, let me ask you the same question I asked Chad Withrow, but let's just change the teams around. How should Vanderbilt feel heading into 2026?
When you say Vanderbilt, are you saying the fan base? Or are you saying the coach? Like, what perspective?
The football. Let's start with the football program. Let's start with the football program as a whole.
Well, from the program standpoint, I think the challenge for Clark Lee will be the word that we use all the time, that is expectations. All of a sudden, you've had this success, and people are going to say, well, hey, you can win. Look, hey, Indiana's winning. Hey, look at the atmosphere in college football. But we also know that in the SEC, you can go from being a playoff contender to sinking down towards the bottom pretty quick. So it is never, never easy, especially at Vanderbilt, despite the foundation he's built. That being said, I think so far they've only lost one coach, and it was to move up. It's the quarterback's coach that took, I think, either a head coaching position or an offensive coordinator position.
I believe it's the offensive coordinator position.
Yeah. But they haven't had a mass exodus there. They've been able to And you takes commitment financially to do this, right, to keep your guys. And so far, they haven't had a bunch of guys run to the transfer portal. But there will still be huge decisions that have to be made in the portal. Barton Simmons has done a tremendous job of evaluating talent. We know how many graduate transfers they had last year. So they got some guys that they're going to have to replace. And then the big question, I think, is Jared Curtis going to be ready as a true freshman to be the guy? And that's a lot to ask. I don't care how talented you are. Remember Arch Manning, he didn't play at all as a true freshman. I think Curtis will probably have every opportunity to try to get in there, but at the same time, that's a delicate thing. You've got to have another guy that is ready to go just in case you need to pull back a little bit. So that's going to be obviously maybe the top thing that people will be looking for, just because of the significance of getting a Nashville recruit with that kind of decorated past.
By the way, Arkansas State hired Vanderbilt quarterbacks coach Garrett Altman as offensive coordinator. So
okay, yeah.
He's joining Butch Jones's staff, right? Arkansas State, that's Butch Jones, right?
I believe so, yes.
Last I checked. I don't follow Arkansas State very closely.
Well, you should. Anyway, let's talk about the big aspect of this, Derek, as Willie just laid out there. The Diego Pavia era is over. It's now up to, presumably, Jared Curtis, who is expected at the moment. It's still very, 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 very early. He is expected to start at quarterback for Vanderbilt. He's already been practicing with the team. He was taking part in bowl practices. Diego Pavia had some significant praise for Jared Curtis. He said this, quote, "I think Jared has some learning to do, some freshman growing pains to get through. This is me speaking 2 weeks in," meaning 2 weeks into knowing Jared Curtis. "His arm is through the roof. He's got everything he needs. He's an NFL player already, I think, if he just learns," end quote. But I am fascinated, Derek, by how Clark Lee and the Commodores will have to adapt now that Diego Pavia isn't running the show. The one thing we talked about all season long, and really for the past two seasons, but especially leading up to the Heisman Trophy presentation, Diego Pavia is the engine that drives that offense, and he has his hands in everything. I don't know if Jared Curtis is going to be the same way as a youngster, so I am fascinated by what changes Clark Lee could make to the offense now that Pavia is no longer a part of the team?
Well, I'm sure there's going to be some tweaks to it, because if Jarrett Curtis turns out to develop the way they want him to and become ultimately the quarterback that they believe he can, there's still steps to it. You can't just throw the whole playbook on him and expect him to run it like Diego did. But I think in time, if he's developing the way that they believe he can, then the offense can sort of look like the dual threat that you saw with Diego Pavia. But first and foremost, I think the offensive line, a lot of it's going to hinge on the offensive line, because they have guys that are graduating, guys that won't be back, guys that played key roles in the last 2 years, with this offensive line being one of the best offensive line in college football, not just in the SEC. So they're going to have to replace that. And how they replace that tells me, or will give me, an indication on how well the quarterback will do in his first year, if he ultimately ends up, being a starter. Because, yes, they got Cedric Alexander coming back, but they have to also boost that running back's room. They got to boost the tight end's room. They have to get some more playmakers at the wide receiver position. I like Trey Richardson and Sherrill. They got to come back. They got to take another step in their evolution and in development as a receiver. We see both of them have big play potential, but we need to see it more consistently. So my thing is, I think they're in a good space, judging by what they're bringing in, the quarterback and everybody else. But to me, I want to see the offensive line and how they establish. Because, yes, Diego – we understand Diego was the front guy. Diego was the engine. But if that offensive line isn't playing the way that they have been playing the last 2 years, his job would have been tougher than what it was. They had a really good offensive line. It didn't show as much against Iowa, but throughout the season the last 2 years, the offensive line has gotten better with each snap they've taken together. So to me, more than anything, how will they replace the offensive lineman that they're losing?
So
yeah, and I would say the extension too is Stowers, right? That the special bond between Pavia and Stowers cannot be replicated. They lose both of those guys. Mm-hmm. As Clark Lee said, even after, a little disappointing to lose to Iowa, but he is 100% right. It's the best season in Vanderbilt history, and the uniqueness of Pavia, and then Stowers, the right-hand man. It is going to be extremely difficult to have that same level next year, no matter what they do in the portal. Because, let's say Jarrett Curtis is able to win the job and be a true freshman starter in the SEC, which would be a tremendous accomplishment. And Diego Pavia is right by saying, he's got a high, high ceiling. But that doesn't mean that he's going to be able to, it's realistic. He's going to make more mistakes. He can't possibly master the offense like Pavia had it mastered as a 22, 23-year-old starter. When Jarrett Curtis, I don't know, is he 18 now?
But Pavia had been in that offense 4 years.
Yes, that's mm-hmm. what I'm saying. It takes a while to become the Jedi Master that he was, right? And have a guy like Stowers who knew the offense so well also. So that is a big, big challenge. You heard how disappointed Chad was when you asked him, Adam, about, hey, how do you feel about the Tennessee – oh, it was a bad year. It was tough. 8-5. Oh, man. And they had their quarterback bolt on him in the spring football, right? But I do think this is what Clark Lee's got to face, right? If Vanderbilt next year goes, let's say, 8-5, which would be an incredible season by Vanderbilt standards, but they're just not as good as they were last year, even though you've got the hype of this quarterback. I hope there isn't disappointment. I wouldn't be disappointed. Because I'm looking ahead and I'm saying, can you possibly replicate the specialness of Pavia and Stowers? And as D-Mace mentioned, a lot of graduate transfers who really gelled well that you have to replace.
And I'm already looking ahead. I hate that I'm doing this, but I'm doing it anyway. I'm looking at Vanderbilt's schedule for next season, which, by the way, kicks off September 5th against Austin Peay at First Bank Stadium. I'm just looking at the SEC portion of the schedule. Some tough matchups for Vanderbilt next season: at Auburn, at Georgia, home to Ole Miss, home to Arkansas, at Kentucky, at Mississippi State, home to Alabama, at Florida, home to Tennessee. And, you're right about Jared Curtis. We talked about Arch Manning and the ups and downs. I mean, Arch Manning had a hell of a Citrus Bowl the other day, right? But we talked about the ups and the downs. Ty Simpson, correct me if I'm wrong, this was his first full year as a starting quarterback in the
right.
SEC, right? And he had, when Vanderbilt caught Ty Simpson, he was at the peak. Mm-hmm. And since that game, I feel like it's been dwindling. And you saw what happened to Alabama the other day. So I'm expecting a similar season from Jared Curtis next season. I could see some highlights, but I'm expecting it to be, Willie, some serious ebbs and flows when you're breaking in like a 19-year-old as a starting quarterback in the SEC.
Sure. I think that's realistic, and hopefully he can learn fast. The fact that he's already had some practices, all of that will help. And they will, you know how it is today. You know, there is no off season. He's going to be working on this from now until they take the field. So it's not like, you know, you go to your prom in April and then you show up maybe to start lifting weights in July. That used to be how it was. I don't know what it was like. When did you first set foot on the campus, D-Mace, when you went and played?
Late July.
Yes. Right. So you didn't go. You didn't go and practice with the team the year before as a high school senior.
No, not at all.
So it's different. It's different. So he'll get some reps, but he's still going to be really young. And until you see it, D-Mace, as you know, you can't know what's coming. These are really good teams he's going to face, and so that is going to be something to watch. But I think if he sticks it out, even if they take a step back next year, they have potential to take some big steps forward over time in his second and third year.
615-737-1025. We will take your reaction to the end of Vanderbilt's football season, the best season in program history. It ended, unfortunately, with a loss at the ReliaQuest Bowl to Iowa the other day. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, the Titans play their final game of the regular season tomorrow. What do we want to see from them in their season finale? 615-737-1025. We are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service.